said, raising his witchlight and shining it into Mark's face. Mark scowled again but allowed Jace to examine him. His eyes were large, long-lashed like Helen's. Unlike hers, his were mismatched. One was blackthorn blue, the color of water. The other was gold, hazed through with shadows, a darker version of Jace's own. Jace swallowed visibly. "The Wild Hunt," he said. "You're one of them now." Jace was scanning the boy with his eyes, as if Mark were a book he could read. "Put your hands out," Jace said finally, and Mark did so. Jace caught them and turned them over, baring the other boy's wrists. Clary felt her throat tighten. Mark was wearing only a t-shirt, and his bare forearms were striped with bloody whip marks. Clary thought of the way she had touched Mark's shoulder, and he'd flinched away. God knew what his other injuries were under his clothes. "When did this happen?" Mark pulled his hands away. They were shaking. "Melion did it," he said. "When he first took me, he said he'd stop if I ate and drank their food, so I did. I didn't think it mattered if my family was dead, and I thought fairies couldn't lie." "Melion can," said Alec grimly. "Or at least he could." "When did all this happen?" Isabel demanded. "The fairies only took you less than a week ago." Mark shook his head. "I've been with the folk for a long time," he said. "I couldn't say how long." "Time runs differently in fairy," Alec said. "Sometimes faster, sometimes slower." Mark said, "Gwyn told me I belonged to the hunt and I couldn't leave them unless they allowed me to go. Is that true?" "It's true," Jace said. Mark slumped against the cave wall. He turned his head toward Clary. "You saw them. You saw my brothers and sisters. And Emma?"
"They're all right, all of them, Emma too," Clary said. She wondered if it helped.
He had sworn to stay in Faerie because he thought his family was dead, and the promise held, though it was based on a lie. Was it better to think you had lost everything and to start over? Or easier to know that the people you loved were alive, even if you could never see them again? She thought of her own mother, somewhere in the world beyond the end of the tunnel. Better to know they were alive, she thought. Better for her mother and Luke to be alive and all right and for her to never see them again than for them to be dead. "Helen can't take care of them, not alone," Mark said a little desperately. "And Jules, he's too young. He can't take care of Ty. He doesn't know the things he needs. He doesn't know how to talk to him." He took a shuddering breath. "You should let me come with you." "You know you can't," Jace said. Though he couldn't look Mark in the face, he was staring at the ground. "If you've sworn fealty to the Wild Hunt, you're one of them." "Take me with you," Mark repeated. He had the stunned, bewildered look of someone who had been mortally injured but didn't yet realize the extent of the injury. "I don't want to be one of them. I want to be with my family."
"We're going to hell," Clary said. "We couldn't bring you with us, even if you could leave Faerie safely."
"And you can't," Alec said. "If you try to leave, you'll die."
"I'd rather die," Mark said, and Jace's head whipped up. His eyes were bright gold, almost too bright, as if the fire inside him was spilling out through them.
"They took you because you have fairy blood, but also because you have Shadowhunter blood. They want to punish the Nephilim," Jace said, his gaze intent. "Show them what a Shadowhunter is made of. Show them you aren't afraid. You can live through this." In the wavering illumination of the witchlight, Mark looked at Jace. Tears had made their tracks through the dirt on his face, but his eyes were dry.
"I don't know what to do," he said. "What do I do?"
"Find a way to warn the Nephilim," Jay said. "We're going into hell, like Clary said. We might never come back. Someone has to tell the Shadowhunters the fair folk are not their allies."
"The hunters will catch me if I try to send a message," the boy's eyes flashed. "They'll kill me."
"Not if you're fast and smart," said Jace. "You can do it, I know you can."
"Jace," Alec said, his bow at his side. "Jace, we need to let him go before the hunt notice he's missing."
"Right," Jace said and hesitated.
Clary saw him take Mark's hand. He pressed his witchlight into the boy's palm where it flickered and then resumed its steady glow.
"Take this with you," said Jace. "For it can be dark in the land under the hill, and the year's very long."
Mark stood for a moment, the runestone in his hand. He looked so slight in the wavering light that Clary's heart hammered a tattoo of disbelief. Surely they could help him. They were Nephilim. They didn't leave their own behind. And then he turned and ran, away from them, on soundless bare feet.
Mark, Clary whispered and cut herself off. He was gone. The shadow swallowed him up, only the darting will-o'-the-wisp light of the runestone visible, until it too blended with the darkness. She looked up at Jace.
What did you mean, the land under the hill? She asked. Why did you say that?
Jace didn't answer. He looked stunned.
She wondered if Mark, brittle and orphaned and alone, reminded him somehow of himself.
The land under the hill is fairy, said Alec. An old, old name for it. He'll be all right, he said to Jace.
He will.
You gave him your witchlight, Isabel said. You've always had that witchlight.
Screw the witchlight, Jace said violently and slammed his hand against the wall of the cave. There was a brief flare of light and he drew his arm back. The mark of his hand was burned into the stone of the tunnel, and his palm still glowed as if the blood in his fingers were phosphorus. He gave an odd, choked laugh.
I don't exactly need it anyway.
Jace, Clary said and put her arm on his arm. He didn't move away from her, but he didn't react either. She dropped her voice.
You can't save everyone, she said.
Maybe not, he said as the light in his hand dimmed. But it would be nice to save someone for a change.
Guys, Simon said. He had been oddly quiet throughout the encounter with Mark, and Clary was startled to hear him speak now.
I don't know if you can see it, but there's something at the end of the tunnel.
A light? Jace said, his voice edged with sarcasm. His eyes glittered.
The opposite. Simon moved forward, and after a hesitant moment, Clary took her hand from Jace's arm and followed him. The tunnel went straight on ahead and then jogged slightly. At the curve, she saw what Simon must have seen and stopped dead.
Darkness. The tunnel ended in a whirling vortex of darkness.
Something moved in it, shaping the dark like the wind shaping clouds. She could hear it too. The purr and rumble of the dark like the sound of jet engines.
The others joined her. Together they stood in a line watching the dark, watching it move. A curtain of shadow and beyond it the utter unknown.
It was Alec who spoke, staring, awed at the moving shadows. The air that blew down the corridor was stinging hot like pepper thrown into the heart of a fire.
This, he said, is the craziest thing we've ever done.
What if we can't ever come back? Isabel said. The ruby around her neck was pulsing, glowing like a stoplight, illuminating her face.
Then at least we'll be together,
Clary said and looked around at her companions. She reached out and took Jace's hand and Simon's hand on the other side of her and held them tight.
We go through together and on the other side we stay together, she said. All right?
None of them answered, but Isabel took Simon's other hand and Alec took Jace's. They all stood for a moment, staring. Clary felt Jace's hand tighten on hers, a nearly imperceptible pressure. They stepped forward, and the shadows swallowed them up.
Mirror, my mirror, said the queen, placing her hand upon the mirror. Show me my morning star. The mirror hung on the wall of the queen's bedroom. It was surrounded by wreaths of flowers, roses from which no one had cut away the thorns. The mist inside the mirror coalesced, and Sebastian's angular face looked out. My beautiful one, he said. His voice was calm and composed, though there was blood on his face and clothes. He was holding a sword, and the stars along the blade were dimmed with scarlet. I am somewhat occupied at the moment. I thought you might wish to know that your sister and adoptive brother have just left this place, said the queen. They found the road to Edom. They are coming to you. His face transformed with a wolfish grin. And they didn't make you promise not to tell me that they came to your court. They did, said the queen. They said nothing about telling you of leaving. Sebastian laughed. They killed one of my knights, said the queen. Spilled blood before my throne. They are beyond my reach now. You know my people cannot survive in the Poisoned Lands. You will have to take my revenge for me. The light in his eyes changed, The queen had always found what Sebastian felt for his sister, and Jace as well, to be something of a mystery. But then Sebastian himself was by far the greater mystery. Before he had come to make her his offer, she would have never considered a true alliance with Shadowhunters. Their peculiar sense of honor made them untrustworthy. It was Sebastian's very lack of honor that made her trust him. The fine craft of betrayal was second nature to fair folk, and Sebastian was an artist of lies.
"I will serve your interests in all ways, my queen," he said. "In a short enough while, your people and mine shall hold the reins of the world, and when we do, you may have revenge on any who have ever offended you."
She smiled at him. Blood still stained the snow in her throne room, and she still felt the jab of Jace Lightwood's blade against her throat. It was not a real smile, but she knew enough to let her beauty do her work for her sometimes.
"I do adore you," she said.
"Yes," said Sebastian, and his eyes flickered, their color like dark clouds.
The queen wondered idly if he thought of the two of them the way she did, lovers who, even while embracing, each held a knife to the other's back, ready to stab and to betray.
"And I do like to be adored," he grinned. "I am glad they are coming. Let them come."
Part 2. That World. Inverted. "And that the whole land thereof is brimstone, and salt, and burning. That it is not sown, nor beareth, nor any grass groweth therein." Deuteronomy 29:23.
14. The Sleep of Reason. Clary stood on a shady lawn that rolled away down a sloping hill. The sky overhead was perfectly blue, dotted here and there with white clouds. At her feet, a stone walkway stretched to the front door of a large manor house, built of mellow golden stone. She craned her head back, looking up. The house was lovely. The stones were the color of butter in the spring sunshine, covered in trellises of climbing roses in red and gold and orange. Wrought iron balconies curved out from the facade, and there were two large arch doors of bronze-colored wood, their surfaces wrought with delicate designs of wings. "Wings for the Fairchild," said a soft voice, reassuring in the back of her mind. "This is Fairchild Manor. It has stood for 400 years and will stand 400 more." "Clary!" Her mother appeared at one of the balconies, wearing an elegant champagne-colored dress. Her red hair was down, and she looked young and beautiful. Her arms were bare, circled with black runes. "What do you think? Doesn't it look gorgeous?" Clary followed her mother's gaze toward where the lawn flattened out. There was an archway of roses set up at the end of an aisle, on either side of which were rows of wooden benches. White flowers were scattered along the aisle, the white flowers that grew only in Idris. The air was rich with their honey scent. She looked back up at her mother, who was no longer standing alone on the balcony. Luke was standing behind her, an arm around her waist. He was in rolled-up shirt sleeves and formal trousers, as if halfway dressed for a party. His arms, too, were twined with runes, runes for good luck, for insight, for strength, for love. "Are you ready?" he called down to Clary. "Ready for what?" she said, but they didn't seem to hear her. Smiling, they disappeared back into the house. Clary took a few steps along the path. "Clary!" she whirled. He was coming toward her across the grass, slender, with white pale hair that shone in the sunlight, dressed in formal black with gold runes at his collar and cuffs. He was grinning, a smudge of dirt on his cheek, and holding up a hand to block the brightness of the sun. Sebastian. He was entirely the same, and yet entirely different. He was clearly himself, and yet the whole shape and set of his features seemed to have changed, his bones less sharp, his skin sun-darkened rather than pale, and his eyes shone as green as spring grass. "He has always had green eyes," said the voice in her head. "People often marvel at how much alike you are, he and your mother and yourself. His name is Jonathan, and he is your brother. He has always protected you." "Clary," he said again, "you're not going to believe." "Jonathan!"
A small voice trilled, and Clary turned her wondering eyes to see a little girl dashing across the grass. She had red hair, the same shade as Clary's, and it flew out behind her like a banner. She was barefoot, wearing a green lace dress that had been so thoroughly torn to ribbons at the cuffs and hem that it resembled shredded lettuce. She might have been 4 or 5 years old, dirty face and adorable. As she reached Jonathan, she held up her arms and he bent down to swing her up into the air. She shrieked in delight as he held her over his head.
"Ouch, ouch, quit that, you demon child," he said as she pulled at his hair. "Val, I said stop or I'll hold you upside down, I mean it."
"Val?" Clary echoed. "But of course her name is Valentina," said the whispering voice in the back of her head. Valentine Morgenstern was a great hero of the war. He died in battle against Hodge Starkweather, but not before he had saved the mortal cup and the clave along with it. When Luke married your mother, they honored his memory in the name of their daughter.
"Clary, make him let me go, make him— Ow!"
shrieked Val as Jonathan turned her upside down and swung her through the air. Val dissolved into giggles as he set her down on the grass, and she turned a pair of eyes, the exact blue of Luke's, up at Clary.
"Your dress is pretty," she said matter-of-factly.
"Thank you," Clary said, still half in a daze, and looked at Jonathan, who was grinning down at his small sister. "Is that dirt on your face?" Jonathan reached up and touched his cheek. "Chocolate," he said. "You'll never guess what I found Val doing. She had both fists in the wedding cake. I'm going to have to patch it up." He squinted at Clary.
"Okay, maybe I shouldn't have mentioned that. You look like you're going to pass out."
"I'm fine," Clary said, tugging nervously at a lock of her hair. Jonathan put his hands up as if to ward her off. "Look, I'll perform surgery on it. No one will ever be able to tell that someone ate half the roses off." He looked thoughtful.
"I could eat the other half of the roses, just so it's even."
"Yeah," said Val from her place on the grass at his feet. She was busy yanking up dandelions, their white pods blowing in the wind.
"Also," Jonathan added, "I hate to bring this up, but you might want to put some shoes on before the wedding."
Clary looked down at herself. He was right, she was barefoot. Barefoot and wearing a pale gold dress. The hem drifted around her ankles like a sunset-colored cloud.
What wedding?" Her brother's green eyes widened. "Your wedding? You know, to Jace Herondale? About yay high, blonde, all the girls love him." He broke off. "You having cold feet, is that what it is?"
He leaned in conspiratorially.
"Because if it is, I'll totally smuggle you over the border into France, and I won't tell anyone where you went, even if they stick bamboo shoots under my fingernails."
"I don't..." Clary stared at him.
"Bamboo shoots?"
He shrugged eloquently.
"For my only sister, not counting the creature currently sitting on my foot," Val yelped, "I would do it. Even if it means not getting to see Isabel Lightwood in a strapless dress."
"Isabel? You like Isabel?" Clary felt as if she were running a marathon and couldn't quite catch her breath. He squinted at her.
"Is that a problem? Is she a wanted criminal or something?" He looked thoughtful. "That would be kind of hot, actually."
"Okay, I don't need to know what you think is hot," Clary said automatically. "Blech." Jonathan grinned. It was an unconcerned, happy grin. The grin of someone who'd never really had much to worry about beyond pretty girls and whether one of his little sisters had eaten the other sister's wedding cake. Somewhere in the back of Clary's mind, she saw black eyes and whip marks. But she didn't know why. "He's your brother. He's your brother and he's always taking care of you."
"Right," he said. "Like I didn't have to suffer through years of,
ooh, Jesus, so cute, do you think he likes me?" Clary said and broke off, feeling a little dizzy. "I just don't remember him proposing."
Jonathan knelt down and tugged on Val's hair. She was humming to herself, bundling daisies together in a pile.
Clary blinked, she'd been so sure they were dandelions.
"Oh, I don't know if he ever did," he said casually. "We all just knew you'd end up together, it was inevitable."
"But I should have gotten to choose," she said in a near whisper. "I should have gotten to say yes."
"Well, you would have, wouldn't you?" he said, watching the daisies blow across the grass. "Speaking of, do you think Isabel would go out with me if I asked her?"
Clary's breath caught.
"But what about Simon?"
He looked up at her, the sun bright in his eyes.
"Who's Simon?"
Clary felt the ground give way under her. She reached out as if to catch at her brother, but her hand went through him. He was as insubstantial as air. The green lawn and the golden mansion and the boy and the girl on the grass flew away from her, and she stumbled, hitting the ground hard, jarring her elbows with a pain she felt flare up her arms. She rolled to her side, choking. She was lying on a patch of bleak ground. Broken cobblestones jutted up through the earth, and the burned-out shells of stone houses loomed over her. The sky was white-grey steel, shot through with black clouds like vampire veins. It was a dead world, a world with all the colour leached out of it, and all the life. Clary curled up on the ground, seeing in front of her not the shell of a destroyed town, but the eyes of the brother and sister that she would never have.
Simon stood at the window, taking in the view of the city of Manhattan. It was an impressive sight. From the penthouse floor of the Carolina, you could see across Central Park, to the Met Museum, to the high-rises of downtown. Night was falling, and the city lights were beginning to shine out, one by one, a bed of electric flowers. Electric flowers. He looked around, frowning thoughtfully. It was a nice turn of phrase. Perhaps he should write it down. He never seemed to have time these days to really work on lyrics. Time was swallowed up by other things. Promotion, touring, signings, appearances. It was hard to remember sometimes that his main job was making music. Still, a good problem to have. The darkening sky turned the window to a mirror. Simon smiled at his reflection in the glass. Tousled hair, jeans, vintage t-shirt. He could see the room behind him, vast acres of hardwood floor, gleaming steel, and leather furniture. A single elegant gold-framed painting on the wall. A Chagall, Clary's favorite. All soft roses and blues and greens, incongruous against the apartment's modernity. There was a vase of hydrangeas on the kitchen island, a gift from his mother, congratulating him on playing a gig with Stepping Razor the week before. "I love you," said the note attached. "I'm proud of you." He blinked at it. Hydrangeas? That was odd. If he had a favorite flower, it was roses, and his mother knew that. He turned away from the window and looked more closely at the vase. They were roses. He shook his head to clear it. White roses. They always had been. Right. He heard the rattle of keys, and the door swung open, admitting a petite girl with long red hair and a brilliant smile. "Oh, my God," said Clary, half laughing, half out of breath. She pushed the door shut behind her and leaned against it. "The lobby is a zoo. Press, photographers, it's going to be crazy going out tonight." She came across the room, dropping her keys on the table. She was wearing a long dress, yellow silk printed with colorful butterflies, and a butterfly clip in her long red hair. She looked warm and open and loving, and as she neared him, she put her arms up, and he went to kiss her. Just like he did every day when she came home. She smelled like Clary, perfume and chalk, and her fingers were smudged with color. She wound her fingers in his hair as they kissed, tugging him down, laughing against his mouth as he nearly overbalanced. "You're gonna have to start wearing heels, Frey," he said, lips against her cheek. "I hate heels. You'll either have to deal, or buy me a portable ladder," she said, letting him go. "Unless you want to leave me for a really tall groupie." "Never," he said, tucking a lock of hair behind her ear. "Would a really tall groupie know all my favorite foods? Remember when I had a bed shaped like a race car? Know how to beat me mercilessly at Scrabble? Be willing to put up with Matt and Kirk and Eric?" A groupie would more than put up with Matt and Kirk and Eric. "Be nice," he said, and grinned down at her. "You're stuck with me." "I'll survive," she said, plucking his glasses off and setting them on the table. The eyes she turned up to him were dark and wide. This time, the kiss was more heated. He wound his arms around her, pulling her against him as she whispered, "I love you. I've always loved you." "I love you, too," he said. "God, I love you, Isabel." He felt her stiffen in his arms, and then the world around him seemed to sprout black lines like shattered glass. He heard a high-pitched whine in his ears and staggered back, tripping, falling, not hitting the ground but spinning forever through the dark.
"Don't look, don't look," Isabel laughed. "I'm not looking." There were hands over her eyes, Simon's hands, slim and flexible. His arms were around her and they were shuffling forward together, laughing. He'd grabbed her the moment she'd walked in the front door, wrapping his arms around her as her shopping bags dropped from her hands. "I have a surprise for you," he said, grinning. "Close your eyes, no looking, no, really, I'm not kidding." "I hate surprises," Isabel protested now. "You know that." She could just see the edge of the rug under Simon's hands. She'd picked it out herself, and it was thick, bright pink, and fuzzy. Their apartment was small and cozy, a hodgepodge of Isabel and Simon, guitars and katanas, vintage posters, and hot pink bedspreads. Simon had brought his cat, Yosarian, when they'd moved in together, which Isabel had protested but secretly liked. She'd missed church after she'd left the institute. The pink rug vanished, and now Isabel's heels clicked onto the tile floor of the kitchen. "Okay," Simon said and withdrew his hands. "Surprise! Surprise!" The kitchen was full of people, her mother and father, Jace and Alec and Max, Clary and Jordan and Maya, Kirk and Matt and Eric. Magnus was holding a silver sparkler and winking, waving it back and forth as the sparkles flew everywhere, landing on the stone counters and Jace's t-shirt making him yelp. Clary was holding a clumsily lettered sign. "Happy birthday, Isabel." She held it up and waved. Isabel whirled on Simon accusingly. "You planned this?" "Of course I did," he said, pulling her towards him. "Shadowhunters might not care about birthdays, but I do." He kissed her ear, murmuring, "You should have everything, Izzy," before he let her go and her family descended. There was a whirl of hugs, of presents, and cake baked by Eric, who actually had something of a flair for pastry creation, and decorated by Magnus with luminous frosting that tasted better than it looked. Robert had his arms around Maris, who was leaning back against him, looking on proudly and contentedly as Magnus, one hand ruffling Alec's hair, tried to convince Max to put on a party hat. Max, with all the self-possession of a 9-year-old, was having none of it. He waved away Magnus's hand impatiently and said, "Izzy, I made the sign. Did you see the sign?" Izzy glanced over at the hand-lettered sign, now liberally smeared with frosting on the table. Clary winked at her. "It's awesome, Max. Thank you." "I was going to put what birthday it was on the sign," he said. "But Jace said that after 20, you're just old, so it doesn't matter anyway." Jace stopped with his fork halfway to his mouth. "I said that?" "Way to make us all feel ancient," said Simon, pushing his hair back to smile at Isabel. She felt a little twist of pain inside her chest. She loved him that much for doing this for her, for always thinking of her. She couldn't remember a time when she hadn't loved him or trusted him, and he'd never given her a reason not to do either. Isabel slid off the stool she'd been sitting on and knelt down in front of her little brother. She could see their reflection in the steel of the refrigerator. Her own dark hair cut to her shoulders now. She remembered vaguely years ago when her hair had reached her waist. And Max's brown curls and glasses. "Do you know how old I am?" she said. 22? Max said in the tone of voice that indicated he wasn't sure why she was asking him such a stupid question. 22, she thought. She'd always been 7 years older than Max. Max the surprise, Max the little brother she hadn't expected. Max, who should be 15 now. She swallowed, suddenly cold all over. Everyone was still talking and laughing around her, but the laughing sounded distant and echoing as if it came from very far away. She could see Simon leaning against the counter, his arms folded over his chest, his dark eyes unreadable as he watched her. "And how old are you?" Isabel said. 9, said Max. "I've always been 9. Isabel stared. The kitchen around her was wavering. She could see through it as if she was staring through printed fabric. Everything going transparent, as mutable as water. "Baby," she whispered. "My Max, my baby brother, please, please stay." "I'll always be 9, he said and touched her face. His fingers passed through her as if he were passing his hand through smoke. "Isabel?" he said in a fading voice and disappeared. Isabel felt her knees give. She sank to the ground. There was no laughter around her, no pretty tiled kitchen, only grey, powdery ash and blackened rock. She put up her hands to stop her tears.
The Hall of Accords was hung with blue banners, each gilded with the flame blazon of the Lightwood family. Four long tables had been arranged facing one another. In the center was a raised speaker's lectern, decked with swords and flowers. Alex sat at the longest table, in the highest of the chairs. On his left was Magnus, and on his right his family stretched out beside him. Isabel and Max, Robert and Maris, Jace, and beside Jace, Clary. There were Lightwood cousins there, too, some of whom he hadn't seen since he'd been a child. All of them were beaming with pride, but no face glowed as brightly as his father's. "My son," he kept saying to anyone who would listen. He had buttonholed the consul now, who had been passing by their table with a glass of wine in hand. "My son won the battle. That's my son up there. Lightwood blood will tell. Our family have always been fighters." The consul laughed. "Save it for the speech, Robert," she said, winking at Alec over the rim of her glass. "Oh, God, the speech," Alec said in horror, hiding his face in his hands. Magnus rubbed his knuckles gently across Alec's spine, as if he were petting a cat. Jace looked over at them and raised his eyebrows. "As if we all haven't been in a room full of people telling us how amazing we are before," he said. And when Alec glared at him sideways, he grinned. "Ah, just me then." "Leave my boyfriend alone," Magnus said. "I know spells that could turn your ears inside out." Jace touched his ears worriedly as Robert rose to his feet, his chair scraping backward, and tapped the side of his fork against his glass. The sound rang out in the room, and the shadow hunters fell silent, looking up toward the Lightwood table expectantly. "We gather here today," said Robert, reaching out his arms expansively, "to honor my son, Alexander Gideon Lightwood, who has single-handedly destroyed the forces of the Undarkened, and who defeated in battle the son of Valentine Morgenstern. Alex saved the life of our third son, Max, along with his parabatai, Jace Herondale. I am proud to say that my son is one of the greatest warriors I have ever known." He turned and smiled at Alec and Magnus. "It takes more than one strong arm to make a great warrior," he went on. "It takes a great mind and a great heart. My son has both. He is strong in courage and strong in love, which is why I also wanted to share our other good news with you. As of yesterday, my son became engaged to be married to his partner, Magnus Bane." A chorus of cheers broke out. Magnus accepted them with a modest wave of his fork. Alex slid down in his chair, his cheeks burning. Jace looked at him meditatively. "Congratulations," he said. "I kind of feel like I missed an opportunity."
What?
Alex stammered. Jace shrugged. "I always knew you had a crush on me. And I kind of had a crush on you, too. I thought you should know."
What?
Alex said again. Clary sat up straight. "You know," she said, "do you think there's any chance that you two could..." She gestured between Jace and Alec. "It would be kind of hot."
"No," Magnus said. "I am a very jealous warlock."
"We're parabatai," Alex said, regaining his voice. "The clay would... I mean, it's illegal."
"Oh, come on," said Jace. "The clay would let you do anything you wanted. Look, everyone loves you."
He gestured out at the room full of shadow hunters. They were all cheering as Robert spoke, some of them wiping away tears. A girl at one of the smaller tables held up a sign that said, "Alec Lightwood, we love you."
"I think you should have a winter wedding," said Isabel,
looking longingly at the white floral centerpiece.
"Nothing too big. 500 or 600 people."
"Isabel!"
Alec croaked. She shrugged.
"You have a lot of fans."
"Oh, for God's sake," Magnus said, and snapped his fingers in front of Alec's face.
His black hair stood up in spikes, and his gold-green eyes were brilliant with annoyance.
This is not happening.
What? Alex stared.
It's a hallucination, Magnus said, brought on by your entry into the demon realms. Probably a demon that lurks near the entrance to the world and feeds on the dreams of travelers.
Wishes have a lot of power, he added, examining his reflection in his spoon, especially the deepest wishes of our hearts.
Alec looked around the room.
This is the deepest wish of my heart?
Sure, Magnus said. Your father, proud of you. You, the hero of the hour. Me, loving you. Everyone, approving of you.
Alec looked over at Jace.
Okay, what about the Jace thing?
Magnus shrugged. I don't know. That part's just weird.
So I have to wake up.
Alec put his hands on the table, flat. The lightwood ring shone on his finger. It all seemed real, felt real. But he couldn't remember what his father was talking about. Couldn't remember defeating Sebastian, or winning a war. Couldn't remember saving Max.
Max,
he whispered. Magnus's eyes darkened.
I'm sorry, he said. The wishes of our hearts are weapons that can be used against us.
Fight, Alec. He touched Alec's face.
This isn't what you want, this dream.
Demons don't understand human hearts. Not well. They see as through a distorted glass and show you what you desire, but warped and wrong. Use that wrongness to push yourself out of the dream. Life is loss, Alexander, but it's better than this.
God,
Alex said and closed his eyes. He felt the world around him crack, as if he were tapping his way out of a shell. The voices around him vanished, along with the feel of the chair underneath him, the smell of food, the clamor of applause, and lastly, the touch of Magnus's hand on his face. His knees hit the ground. He gasped, and his eyes snapped open. All around him was a gray landscape. The stink of garbage hit his nostrils, and he jerked back instinctively as something reared over him. A surging mass of inchoate smoke, a cluster of glittering yellow eyes hanging in the darkness. They glared out at him as he fumbled for his bow and drew it back. The thing roared and rushed forward, surging toward him like a wave breaking. Alec let the ruined arrow fly. It flicked through the air and sank itself deep into the smoke demon. A shrilling scream cracked the air. The demon pulsing around, the arrow buried deep inside it. Tendrils of smoke flailing outward, clawing at the sky. And the demon vanished. Alec scrambled to his feet, fumbling another arrow into position, and swung around, scanning the landscape. It looked like pictures he'd seen on the surface of the moon, pitted and ashy. And above was a scorched sky, gray and yellow, cloudless. The sun hung orange and low, a dead cinder. There was no sign of the others. Fighting down panic, he jogged up the rise of the nearest hill, and down the other side. Relief hit him in a wave. There was a depression between two rises of ash and rock, and crouched in it was Isabel, struggling to her feet. Alex scrambled down the steep side of the hill and caught her in a one-armed hug.
"Is," he said.
She made a sound suspiciously like a sniffle and pulled away from him.
"I'm all right," she said.
There were tear tracks on her face. He wondered what she had seen. The wishes of our hearts are weapons that can be used against us.
"Max," he asked.
She nodded, her eyes bright with unshed tears and anger. Of course Isabel would be angry. She hated to cry.
"Me too,"
he said, and then whirled at the sound of a footstep, half-pushing Isabel behind him. It was Clary, and beside her, Simon. They both looked shell-shocked. Isabel moved out from behind Alec.
"You two?"
"Fine," Simon said. "We saw things. Weird things." He wouldn't meet Isabel's gaze, and Alec wondered what he'd imagined. What were Simon's dreams and desires? Alec had never given it much thought.
"It was a demon," Alec said. "The kind that feeds on dreams and wishes. I killed it."
He glanced from them to Isabel.
"Where's Jace?"
Clary paled under the dirt on her face.
"We thought he'd be here with you."
Alex shook his head.
He's all right, he said. I'd know if he weren't.
But Clary had already spun back around and was half running back the way she'd come. After a moment, Alec followed her, and so did the others. She scrambled up the rise, and then up another rise. Alec realized she was heading for higher ground, where the view would be better. He could hear her coughing. His own lungs felt coated with ash.
Dead, he thought. Everything in this world is dead and burned to dust. What happened here?
At the top of the hill was a cairn of stones, a circle of smooth rocks, like a dried-out well. Seated on the edge of the cairn was Jace, staring at the ground.
Jace!
Clary skidded to a halt in front of him, dropped to her knees, and caught at his shoulders. He looked at her blankly.
Jace, she said again, urgently. Jace, snap out of it. It's not real. It's a demon, making us see the things we want.
Alec killed it. Okay, it's not real.
I know.
He looked up, and Alec felt the look like a blow. Jace looked as if he'd been bleeding out, though he was obviously uninjured.
What did you see? Alec said.
Max. Jace shook his head. I didn't see anything.
It's all right. Whatever you saw, it's all right, Clary said.
She leaned in, touched Jace's face. Alec was reminded acutely of Magnus's fingers on his cheek in the dream. Magnus saying he loved him. Magnus, who might not even still be alive.
I saw Sebastian, she said. I was in Idris. The Fairchild house was still standing. My mom was with Luke. There was going to be a wedding. She swallowed. I had a little sister, too. She was named after Valentine. He was a hero. Sebastian was there, but he was fine. He was normal. He loved me. Like a real brother.
That's messed up, Simon said. He moved closer to Isabel, and they stood shoulder to shoulder. Jace reached out and ran a careful finger down one of Clary's curls, letting it wind around his hand. Alec remembered the first time he'd realized Jace was in love with her. He'd been watching his Parabatai across a room, watching Jace's eyes track her movements. He remembered thinking, she's all he sees.
We all have dreams, Clary said. It doesn't mean anything. Remember what I said before. We stay together.
Jace kissed her forehead and stood up, holding out a hand. After a moment, Clary took it and rose to her feet beside him.
I didn't see anything, he said gently. All right?
She hesitated, clearly not believing him. Just as clearly, she didn't want to press the point.
All right?
I hate to bring this up, Isabel said. But did anyone see a way back? Alec thought of his headlong rush over the desert hills, searching for the others, eyes raking the horizon. He saw his companions pale as they glanced around.
I think, he said, that there is no way back. Not from here. Not down the tunnel. I think it closed up after us.
So this is a one-way trip, said Clary, with only a slight tremble to her voice.
Not necessarily, said Simon. We have to get to Sebastian. We always knew that.
And once we get there, Jace can try to do his thing with the heavenly fire, whatever that is. No offense.
None taken, said Jace,
casting his eyes up to the sky.
And once we rescue the prisoners, said Alec, Magnus can help us get back. Or we can figure out how Sebastian gets back and forth. This can't be the only way.
That's optimistic, said Isabel.
What if we can't rescue the prisoners? Or we can't kill Sebastian?
Then he'll kill us, said Jace, and it won't matter that we don't know how to get back. Clary squared her small shoulders. Then we better get to finding him, hadn't we? Jace tugged his steely free of his pocket and took Sebastian's bracelet off his wrist. He closed his fingers around it, using the steely to draw a tracking rune on the back of his hand. A moment passed, and then another. A look of intense concentration passed over Jace's face, like a cloud. He lifted his head.
He's not that far, he said. A day, maybe 2 days of walking away.
He slid the bracelet back onto his wrist. Alec looked at it pointedly, and then at Jace. If I cannot reach heaven, I will raise hell. Wearing it will keep me from losing it, Jace said. And when Alec said nothing, Jace shrugged and started off down the hill. We should get moving, he called back over his shoulder. We've got a long way to go. 15. Brimstone and Salt. Please don't rip my hand off, Magnus said. I like that hand. I need that hand. Hmm, said Raphael, who was kneeling beside him, his hands on the chain that ran between the manacle on Magnus's right hand, and the adamas loop sunk deep into the floor. I am only trying to help. He jerked hard on the chain, and Magnus yelped in pain and glared. Raphael had thin, boyish hands, but that was deceptive. He had a vampire's strength, and he was currently bending its power to the purpose of yanking Magnus's chains out by the roots. The cell they were in was circular. The floor was made of granite flagstones, overlapping. Stone benches ran around the inside of the walls. There was no discernible door, though there were narrow windows, as narrow as arrow slits. There was no glass in them, and it was possible to see from their depth that the walls were at least a foot thick. Magnus had woken up in this room, a circle of red-geared dark shadow hunters standing around him, affixing his chains to the floor. Before the door had clanged shut behind them, he'd seen Sebastian standing in the corridor outside, grinning in at him like a death's head. Now Luke stood at one of the windows, staring out. None of them had been given a change of clothes, and he still wore the suit trousers and shirt he'd worn to dinner in Alicante. The front of his shirt was splashed with rusty stains. Magnus had to keep reminding himself it was wine. Luke looked haggard, his hair rumpled, one of the lenses of his glasses cracked. "Do you see anything?" Magnus asked now, as Raphael moved to the other side to see if the left-hand chain would be any easier to remove. Magnus was the only one chained. By the time he'd woken up, Luke and Raphael had already been awake, Raphael lounging against one of the benches, while Luke called out for Jocelyn until he was hoarse. "No," Luke said shortly. Raphael raised an eyebrow at Magnus. He looked tousled and young, teeth digging into his lower lip as his knuckles whitened around the chain links. They were long enough to allow Magnus to sit up, but not to stand. Just fog. Gray-yellow fog. Maybe mountains in the distance, it's hard to tell. Do you think we're still in Idris? Raphael asked. No, Magnus said shortly. We're not in Idris. I can feel it in my blood. Luke looked at him. Where are we? Magnus could feel the burn in his blood, the beginning of fever. It prickled along his nerves, drying his mouth, making his throat ache. We're in Edom, he said, a demon dimension. Raphael dropped the chain and swore in Spanish. I cannot free you, he said, clearly frustrated. Why have Sebastian's servants chained only you and not either of us? Because Magnus needs his hands to do magic, said Luke. Raphael looked at Magnus, surprised. Magnus wiggled his eyebrows. Didn't know that, vampire? He said. I would have thought you would have figured it out by now. You've been alive long enough. Perhaps. Raphael sat back on his heels. But I've never had much business with warlocks. Magnus gave him a look that said, we both know that isn't true. Raphael looked away. Too bad, Magnus said. If Sebastian had done his research, he would have known I can't do magic in this realm. There's no need for this. He rattled his chains like Marley's ghost. So this is where Sebastian's been hiding all this time, Luke said. This is why we couldn't track him. This is his base of operations. Or, said Raphael, this is just some place he has abandoned us to die and rot. He wouldn't bother, Luke said. If he wanted us dead, we'd be dead. The three of us. He's got some larger plan. He always does. I just don't know why... He broke off, looking down at his hands, and Magnus remembered him suddenly much younger. Flyaway hair, and worried looks, and his heart on his sleeve.
He won't hurt her, Magnus said. Jocelyn, I mean.
He might, Raphael said. He is very crazy.
Why wouldn't he hurt her? Luke sounded as if he were holding in a fear that threatened to explode.
Because she's his mother?
It doesn't work that way. Sebastian doesn't work that way.
Not because she's his mother, Magnus said. Because she's Clary's mother. She's leverage. And he won't give that up easily.
They had been walking for what seemed like hours now, and Clary was exhausted. The uneven ground made the walking harder. None of the hills were very high, but they were pathless and covered in shale and jagged rock. Sometimes there were plains of sticky, tarry pitch to cross, and their feet sank in almost to the ankles, dragging down their steps. They paused to put on runes for sure-footedness and strength, and to drink water. It was a dry place, all smoke and ashes, with the occasional bright river of molten rock sludging through the burned land. Their faces were already smeared with dirt and ash, their gear powdered with it. "Ration the water," Alec warned, capping his plastic bottle. They had paused in the shadow of a small mountain, its jagged top snarled up into peaks and crenellations that made it resemble a crown. "We don't know how long we'll be traveling." Jace touched the bracelet on his wrist, and then his tracking rune. He frowned at the traced pattern on the back of his hand. "The runes we just put on," he said. "Someone show me one." Isabel made an impatient noise, then thrust out her wrist, where Alec had inked a speed rune earlier. She blinked down at it. "It's fading," she said, a sudden uncertainty in her voice. "My tracking rune as well, and the others," said Jace, glancing over his skin. "Think runes fade more quickly here. We're going to have to be careful about using them. Check to make sure when they need to be applied again." "Our speed runes are fading," Isabel said, sounding frustrated. "That could be the difference between 2 days of walking and three. Sebastian could be doing anything to the prisoners." Alec winced. "He won't," Jace said. "They're his insurance that the Clave will turn us over to him. He won't do anything to them unless he's sure that won't happen." "We could walk all night," Isabel said. "We could use wakefulness runes. Keep applying them." Jace glanced around. Dirt was smudged under his eyes and across his cheeks and forehead where he'd rubbed the palm of his hand. The sky had deepened from yellow to dark orange, smeared with roiling black clouds. Clary guessed that meant the nightfall was near. She wondered if days and nights were the same in this place, or if the hours were different, the rotations of this planet subtly misaligned. "When wakefulness runes fade, you crash," Jay said. "Then we'll be facing Sebastian basically hungover. Not a good idea." Alec followed Jace's gaze around the deadly landscape. "Then we're going to have to find a place to rest. Sleep, aren't we?" Clary didn't hear whatever Jace said next. She'd already moved away from the conversation, clambering up the steep side of a ridge of rock. The effort made her cough. The air was foul, thick with smoke and ash, but she didn't feel like staying for an argument. She was exhausted, her head was pounding, and she kept seeing her mother over and over in her head. Her mother and Luke standing on a balcony together, hand in hand, looking down at her fondly. She dragged herself up to the top of the rise and paused there. It sloped down steeply on the other side, ending in a plateau of grey rock that stretched to the horizon, piled here and there with heaps of slag and shale. The sun had lowered in the sky, though it was still the same burned orange color. "What are you looking at?" said a voice at her elbow. She started and turned to find Simon there. He wasn't quite as grimy as the rest of them. Dirt never seemed to stick to vampires, but his hair was full of dust. She pointed to dark holes where they pocked the side of the nearby hill like gunshot wounds. "Those are cave entrances, I think," she said. "Kind of looks like something out of World of Warcraft, doesn't it?" he said, gesturing around them at the blasted landscape, the ash-torn sky. "Only you can't just turn it off to get away." "I haven't been able to turn it off for a long time." Clary could see Jace and the other Lightwoods a distance away, still arguing. "Are you all right?" Simon asked. "I haven't had a chance to talk to you since everything happened with your mother and Luke." "No," Clary said, "I'm not all right, but I have to keep going. If I keep going, I cannot think about it." "I'm sorry." Simon put his hands in his pockets, his head down. His brown hair blew across his forehead, across the place where the mark of Cain had been.
Are you kidding? I'm the one who's sorry for everything, for the fact that you got turned into a vampire, the mark of Cain.
That protected me, Simon protested. That was a miracle. It was something only you could do.
That's what I'm afraid of, Clary whispered.
What?
That I don't have any more miracles in me, she said, and her lips pressed together as the others joined them.
Jace looked curiously from Simon to Clary, as if wondering what they had been talking about.
Isabel gazed out over the plain, at the acres of bleakness ahead, the view choked with dust.
Did you see something?
What about those caves? Simon asked, gesturing towards the dark entrances tunneling into the mountainside.
Their shelter...
Good idea, Jace said. We're in a demon dimension, God knows what lives here, and you want to crawl into a narrow dark hole and...
All right, Simon interrupted. It was just a suggestion, you don't need to get pissed off.
Jace, who was clearly in a mood, gave him a cold look.
That wasn't me pissed off, vampire.
A dark piece of cloud detached itself from the sky and darted suddenly downward, faster than any of them could follow. Clary caught a single horrible glimpse of wings and teeth and dozens of red eyes, and then Jace was rising up into the air, caught in the clawed grip of an airborne demon. Isabel screamed. Clary's hand went to her belt, but the demon had already shot back up into the sky, a whirl of leathery wings, emitting a high-pitched squeal of victory. Jace made no noise at all. Clary could see his boots dangling, motionless. Was he dead? Her vision went white. Clary whirled on Alec, who already had his bow out, an arrow notched and ready.
Shoot it! She screamed.
He spun like a dancer, scanning the sky.
I can't get a clear shot, it's too dark. I could hit Jace.
Isabel's whip uncoiled from her hand, a glimmering wire, reaching up, up, impossibly up. Its shimmering light illuminated the clouded sky, and Clary heard the demon scream again, this time a shrill cry of pain. The creature was spinning through the air, tumbling over and over, Jace caught in its grip. Its claws were sunk deep into his back, or was he clinging to it? Clary thought she saw the gleam of a seraph blade, or it might have only been the shimmer of Izzy's whip as it reached up, and then fell back to the earth in a brightening coil. Alex swore and let an arrow fly. It shot upward, piercing the darkness. A second later, a heaving dark mass plummeted to earth and hit the ground with a whoomp that sent up a cloud of powdery ash. They all stared. Splayed, the demon was large, almost the size of a horse, with a dark green, turtle-like body, limp leathery wings, six centipede-like clawed appendages, and a long stem of a neck that ended in a circle of eyes and jagged, uneven teeth. The shaft of Alec's arrow protruded from its side. Jace was kneeling on its back, a seraph blade in his hand. He plunged it down into the back of the creature's neck viciously over and over, sending up small geysers of black ichor that sprayed his clothes and face. The demon gave a squealing gurgle and slumped, its multiple red eyes going blank and lightless. Jay slid from its back, breathing hard. The seraph blade had already begun to warp and twist with ichor. He tossed it to the side and looked levelly at the small group of his friends, all staring at him with expressions of astonishment.
That, he said, was me pissed off.
Alec made a sound halfway between a groan and an expletive, and lowered his bow. His black hair was stuck to his forehead with sweat.
You don't all have to look so worried, Jay said. I was doing fine.
Clary, light-headed with relief, gasped. Fine? If your definition of fine suddenly includes becoming a snack for a flying death turtle, then we're going to have words, Jace Lightwood.
It didn't vanish, Simon interrupted, looking as stunned as the rest of them. The demon, it didn't vanish when you killed it.
No, it didn't, Isabel said. Which means its home dimension is here. Her head was craned back and she was studying the sky. Clary could see the gleam of a newly applied far-sighted rune on her neck. And apparently these demons can go out in the daylight. Probably because the sun here is almost burnt out, we need to get out of this area. Simon coughed loudly.
What were you all saying about taking shelter in the caves being a bad idea?
Actually, that was just Jace, said Alec. Seems like a fine idea to me.
Jace glared at them both and scrubbed a hand across his face, succeeding in smearing the black ichor across his cheek. Let's check the caves out. We'll find a small one, scout it thoroughly before we rest.